Today's show is brought to you by Castwave Studios' Amazon page. Go to castwavestudios.com and click the boldly going shopping tab and search for everything from Apple iPads to zebra striped Snuggies. Oh, it's so cozy. This supports the studio and helps keep the lights on. Click the boldly going shopping tab at castwavestudios.com.
Boldly Going Nowhere is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
The Internet, the final frontier.
Well, hello. You're listening to an interview recorded at the Too Many Games Convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Make sure to go to www.castwavestudios.com/events to stay up to date on all of our event coverage. Enjoy.
I'm Justin Eisenstadt.
I'm Colin Kaepernick.
I'm Sean Holm.
I'm Brian Massey.
And I'm Jordan Hazelwood.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we are boldly going nowhere.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Boldly Going Nowhere. I'm Colin Kaepernick here on location live at Too Many Games in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We're here today with the author Jeff Ryan, the author of Super Mario, How Nintendo Conquered America.
How you doing, guys?
And we want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. So I actually purchased a copy of this book last night and got home, proceeded to start reading it. I'm 3/4 of the way through the book now. And it was a very gripping read. The only reason I put it down is just because I can't read in the car. I get car sick very easily. But
well, I did try to make it fun, not just for like game fans, but for anyone, because just about everyone has played Mario at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question. When did you get the idea that, okay, I want to write a book, but I want to write it about the history of Super Mario?
I was trying to write a book about 4 or 5 years ago that was going to be a coffee table book, the history of games. Every couple of pages would be a whole different year, and there would be pictures of every game ever made. And I tried to pitch it, and it didn't work. But one of the agents I was talking to was saying, you know, this would be a lot easier sell if it was narrative nonfiction. And I was like, okay, narrative nonfiction. So no pictures? Like, no pictures. I was like, well, how do you tell a story about gaming? And I started to think, well, you can't really tell the Sonic the Hedgehog story because that starts before gaming, or it starts after gaming really started.
Right.
You can't tell Atari's story because Atari just kind of dies around 1983 and then it just gets very sad.
Yes.
But I thought the Nintendo story begins kind of near the beginning and you get all the way right through the present and you'd have the same cast of characters.
Right.
Because people at Nintendo never leave. I mean, Shigeru Miyamoto's been working there since the 70s, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I through reading this, you know, there are certain facts. I mean, most Nintendo fans, like, if you told them that Nintendo was not just didn't start as a video game company, but it actually started as a card game company in 1800s, most people would be like, wait, what? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But people accept that maybe Konami was around, and I think they were fixing pinball machines before that they were actually a real company or a video game company.
Yeah, I would also say that Nintendo, for non-gamers, is synonymous with video games. Like, when people who don't really play video games, not familiar with the hobby, think of video games, they think of Nintendo. And Nintendo is one of the few companies, or even the first company, to really try and target non-gamers and so-called casual gamers.
There's actually a business phrase for that I learned called the Blue Ocean Strategy. Meaning, like, if you think of, like, the shooter genre, that is a red ocean, meaning there are lots of sharks and there's lots of blood in the water. If you try to make a new shooter, you have a very high level to pass because there's a million other very good shooters out there.
Yeah.
And the fans are asking for a lot, and they have a huge choice.
Yeah.
But if you look at the moms out there who are buying the games for their, you know, for their kids and for their, like, 10-year-olds and like that, they don't have that many choices for games. They're not gonna buy any of the Call of Duties. They're not buying Battlefield. They're not buying Halo. But they can still buy games. Their money is still green. So Nintendo targeted them. They targeted seniors. Everyone who normally wasn't targeted to play video games. That's how the Wii really succeeded.
Yeah, and like I said, when I say this covers the history of Nintendo, it covers from everything from pre the 1983 crash in video games to the 90s rivalry with Sega, and particularly I'm about to the part where I believe they had just introduced the Nintendo 64.
Okay.
Right around there.
Okay, cool.
That's where I'm at right now. And like I said, it's a gripping read. I was up until about 4 o'clock this morning reading it.
We can confirm that.
Yeah. No, and it is, and there's a lot of stories in there that I've never personally heard before, like the lawsuit between... The lawsuit between Universal and
Nintendo.
And I won't spoil it, but it's quite a funny story, and I also didn't know that that was where the name for Kirby from the Kirby's Dream Land series actually originated. I had no clue about that.
Okay, I'm going to spoil the book for you a little bit later on, but there's a bit where Microsoft is trying to bring in developers for the mm-hmm. Xbox, so they approach Bungie, and Bungie gives them Halo, obviously. Yes. They approach Nintendo and just said, hey, can we buy you? And Nintendo didn't just say no. They actually went to their board of directors and said, Microsoft has offered to buy us. Should we do it? And they thought about it and said, no, we're going to make the GameCube instead. So Nintendo had to call them back a couple days later and say no. So it seems like a wow, look at the balls on Microsoft, but it was a serious decision they had to make.
Well, yeah, and that's understandable, especially around that time when the GameCube came out. It was around 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
That's when Microsoft was on top of industry. Not just, gaming, and not America, but just they were on top of the world when it came to industry and finance. And for Nintendo to say, yeah, we're going to have to turn that down. I mean, there have been companies that were just as large as Nintendo that got swallowed up by conglomerates like Microsoft. But
right.
you would think that, and you're like, look at the balls on Microsoft. I'd actually say, look at the balls on Nintendo.
For saying no.
Right,
exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that makes you understand, oh, this is where Nintendo's coming from. They sold $180 million worth of Donkey Kong cabinets in 1981. That's 1981 dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So since 1981, they've been sitting on a throne of gold. So whenever they need to make a business decision, anyone else in the world needs to consider the bottom line. Nintendo basically has no bottom line.
Yeah.
If it's it'll take another 2.5 years to develop this Mario spinoff, it's like, okay, you got another 2.5 years. Well, eventually it'll come out. Maybe it'll come out in April instead of when people actually buy games, but it'll come out and then we'll, sooner or later make our money on it.
Precisely. And like I said, this also chronicles, not only its beginning, its inception, but the effect and the impact it's had on cultural society. I mean, obviously, you go into the crash of video games in 1983, and thus, the popularity that Donkey Kong was starting to build, and then the crush in the market. We actually got to meet Nolan Bushnell at the Art of Video Games, which was an event.
Oh, you went down to DC for that?
Well, yeah, we're from Frederick, so it was a bit of a drive for us, but we got to go down there. We got to hear him speak, and he was actually talking about the crash of the video games. And funnily enough, I remember you mentioning Apple in its infancy and, talking about Apple as a parallel to Nintendo. The funny thing about that was he actually mentioned that one of the worst decisions he's ever made in his life was turning down a third of the shares in Apple for $50,000.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, that's probably a business decision that still hurts me to this day.
Wow.
I was like, yeah, that... He was a nice guy. And
very compelling speaker, too. Very
And I guess here's a question I would actually ask. How long did it take you to actually research everything in this book?
Well, the coffee table book, I spent about a year and a half researching. Mm-hmm. And then when I got a no on that, it's like, well, I got to do something with this. So I worked on Mario, and it only took me about 3 months to mm-hmm. put the first draft together. And then a couple of months later of editing, and we sold it. And then there's a couple more months of editing after that.
Yes.
But it's more editing than writing at this point.
Okay. Well, and I note that you actually not only, in the book, you not only, cite previous conversations, relationships that, were burgeoned and then destroyed by, this entire history of this company, but then you also go into discussions about, how other writers have mentioned you know, how the writers have gone into detail into those sort of scenarios, and you say, you know, read this book so you understand the full story. I mean, you make mention of it, which is good, that, you know, keeps the reader in, but
it's
also,
like a side quest. Like, yes. Oh, you want to know about Tetris? You got to go read Game Over by David Sheff, because he has two incredible chapters about the Tetris story, which they should make into a movie, because it's that good. There's so much craziness going on with the Tetris story, and I couldn't fit most of it in. I couldn't fit hardly any of it in. I just needed to say, go read this book.
No, and I would say that there are at least seven or eight books at this point that I now want to go find, I want to buy, and I want to read simply through reading through 8 or 9 chapters of this book. And, you know, it not only makes me want to crack out the old NES again, but it also makes me want to, like, read, which you hear a book on video games, it's like, okay, that makes me want to game, but make me want to read, that's a new one.
Yeah, well, you want to put down the controller or pick up a book?
Crazy, but I would say anybody who is listening to this interview, pick up a copy of Super Mario, How Nintendo Conquered America. Where can they find this, Jeff? I mean, if they can't meet you at a convention and pick up a signed copy, where can they pick this book up?
It's going to be in paperback in September. Meanwhile, you can download the audiobook from Audible. You can get it at the iTunes store for iBooks or the Kindle or Nook, and it's in the business section of every bookstore.
Okay. And besides this book, is there anything else you want to plug? Any new projects coming up?
I just had a story that came out in this new horror anthology, but it's in the horror section. It's not.
Well, I actually do have a couple of questions.
Let's go ahead, Justin.
Okay, so first is kind of an actual specific question to this, then kind of a more general question about writing. But this book was released last year, correct?
Right.
So you haven't clearly been able to go into the new developments with Nintendo with the release of their new system, the Wii U.
When the paperback comes out, it's going to have a chapter on Wii U and how Nintendo just barely survived 2011.
Yes, because from looking at the E3 coverage and just general reactions on the internet, this is probably the most vitriolic I have seen people on the internet about a Nintendo update. Even though they get this kind of stuff with almost every system that they do, and then they almost always prove people wrong.
Right.
But in this case, it generally seems like the Wii U is leaving even diehard Nintendo fans with their heads scratching. So
yeah, Nintendo had to do something to not just put out console X. And I think they were smart in doing something with a hardware change where no one else could do what they did. The problem is the hardware change they picked was this asymmetrical gaming thing where you had a tablet as your controller. And anyone who has a tablet will very soon be able to do that. They'll be able to send their information to their TV, so they'll be able to have asymmetrical gaming without buying a Wii U. I think Nintendo wanted to do something else. They wanted to do something bigger and grander, but they either couldn't get it done in time or they couldn't get it to the right budget, because they don't want to put out a $900 game system.
Right, and the problem with Nintendo's revolutionary ideas is that your vision and your revolution is only as good as the third-party people who support it.
Yeah.
And that has been a long problem with the DS, with the Wii, and now with the Wii U.
Yeah, here's a very short horror story. Third-party Wii games.
Yes, that's all you need to say.
Well, no, and actually, Jeff does go into a very in-depth description as to, you know, Nintendo, why they shy away from third-party... why they shy away from third parties in order to maintain autonomy.
Yeah.
And it's a very good explanation, I think, personally.
And
my other question is a general question about writing.
Okay.
So do you also write fiction? Because I think you have some other books here.
Yeah, I write fiction. My agent is only a nonfiction agent. So if I ever wanted to get like a novel published, I'd have to go get another agent.
Okay, I write fiction, so I'm working on a novel right now. And my question for you is about your opinion on the writing process. How much time do you spend plotting and outlining a book before you actually start writing? Because I keep finding myself in this endless cycle of revising notes, revising outlines, revising characters, and not writing a single actual sentence of fiction, of prose.
I'll normally write about 50 pages worth, and then I'll start doing an outline. Because I know, like, the basics. I know the beginning. So I'll write the beginning, and then I'll think, oh, I need to actually figure out where this is going, because I don't want to leave anything up by the wayside. And so then I'll get into, like, that churn, like you're saying, where I work on an outline, and then I work on, like, what the last chapter might be, and you kind of lose the fact that you were supposed to be writing, and you're just kind of working about writing instead of actually writing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I can justify it to myself, like, well, I'm still working on the book, but there's nothing coming out. So.
Yeah. Well, it helps that Microsoft Word now has, like, a word count on it.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, it's like, well, I just added 300 words to the book. If nothing else, I have an extra page of book that I didn't have at the beginning of the day.
Yeah. Are you familiar with this event called NaNoWriMo? It's National Novel Writing Month, and basically...
Oh, yes, yes. I've never actually heard anyone say it. I've seen...
You're just like, how is that pronounced? I think it's NaNoWriMo, because...
No, I think you're right.
I did that last November. It was a lot of fun, because I actually managed to hit the goal, but then I didn't actually finish a novel. So I'm like, did I actually win or not? But
I think that counts.
It was a very interesting exercise. But anyways, I'm getting off on a tangent about writing, but... As someone who wants to be a writer, it's always good to speak to someone who actually has a book in physical
This is
form.
Actually one of my pet peeves. When people say, like, I want to be a writer, I'm an aspiring writer. You are a writer.
Right.
What you want to do is a writer who gets sold and
yeah.
You know, have people read their stuff.
I agree with that. So.
Yeah, the aspiring writer is a whole different problem. The aspiring writer is like, they look at the blank page and they don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's not so much the issue, but yeah. I hear what you're saying. So, anyways.
All right, well, I want to thank you once again, Jeff, for not only coming on the show, but writing this book, because like I said, it's one of the best reads I've had all year.
Oh, thank you, man.
No problem, and I want to thank you for boldly going nowhere.
Thank you.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com.